Welcome to the Movement Church podcast. Our vision is to be a movement of people finding their way back to God. We want to be a place where you can own your faith and take next steps in your relationship with Jesus. Maybe your next step is to seek out a community and join a movement group. Maybe it's supporting movement financially for the first time or using your gifts on a volunteer team. Whatever God is calling you to do, our prayer is that you will step out in faith and let Him lead you. For more information about your next step, please visit movementcolumbus.com.
Well, yes, Sarah pointed out there's a few things different today. The first one I want to warn you about is this. Maybe you don't know, when I talk, I spit a lot. And you've never noticed because the gym is kind of dark and people are far back. There's an 80% chance the first two rows are going to get spit on today. So I apologize in advance. And that sounds like a pastor joke, but I promise it's not at all. Like, I'm really going to spit on you. So be ready for that. Another thing, it's funny, I heard someone say this morning, this is an exact quote, I'm not just making this up. They came in, they were smiling, and they were like, oh, this is awesome, change energizes me. And I was like, all right, that's a really good attitude. And then I saw some other people that did not feel that way, right? So we can all overanalyze each other's personalities based on how you're feeling today. Some people are like really uncomfortable and not liking this. And I promise that it will be back to normal next week and it'll be okay. Third thing is you'll notice that you'll be able to tell who's walking in from their car really late behind me. So let's just take after the Pharisees in the New Testament and judge them with everything we've got, okay? So give them a really dirty look when they walk. No, I'm joking. But at one point in first service, there was like kids were out on the playground and like some kid like climbed the fence or something. He was like running and I saw them going after him and I was like, this is not great. But we'll just pretend we're all engaged and focused here together and that we're doing our best today, all right? So anyway, it's good to be together. The plan is today that we're going to wrap up Summer in the Psalms. I think this is like our 12th week. We've been in this book all summer. Knowing and trusting that when we spend time in a book that we can see the total narrative there that God wants us to know. And I think that this has had value and I'm excited for us to complete this. I know some of you have been reading through the Psalms this summer. My son's been doing it. I think he'll wrap up here in about a week. So you don't have to tell me if you're as good at doing your devotions as my 11-year-old, but if you want to just pretend you've done it, you can say that, or you can be excited. So, but anyway, we're gonna jump into the Bible here. So maybe you've got one under your seat there somewhere, but if you want to grab that, we're gonna be in Psalm 139, wrapping up here, and it's actually on page 476. Psalm 139 is on page 476. I want to just read this. We want to unpack this again and see what God has for us. So let's read this together. Psalm 139, verse 1 on page 476 says this. O Lord, you have examined my heart and know everything about me. You know when I sit down or stand up. You know my thoughts even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel and when I rest at home. You know everything I do. You know what I'm going to say even before I say it, Lord. You go before me and follow me. You place your hand of blessing on my head. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too great for me to understand. I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to heaven, you are there. If I go down to the grave, you are there. If I ride the wings of the morning, if I dwell by the farthest oceans, even there your hand will guide me and your strength will support me. I could ask the darkness to hide me and the light around me to become night. But even in darkness, I cannot hide from you. To you, the night shines as bright as day. Darkness and light are the same to you. You made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb. Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous. How well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb. You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed. How precious are your thoughts about me, O God. They cannot be numbered. I can't even count them. They outnumber the grains of sand. And when I wake up, you are still with me. O God, if only you would destroy the wicked. Get out of my life, you murderers. They blaspheme you. Your enemies misuse your name. O Lord, shouldn't I hate those who hate you? Shouldn't I despise those who oppose you? Yes, I hate them with total hatred, for your enemies are my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you, and lead me along the path of everlasting life. This is a passage that really begins to describe God in ways that many of us maybe aren't familiar with or haven't known. And I love that this passage is not necessarily a place that we can draw verse-by-verse theology, but more we can look at it as it's a description of God and some of his qualities. And I think it gets at the heart of a quote that I once heard that said, "A God who can be fathomed or a God who can be understood is no God at all." There's a lot of mystery in this telling of who God is, and there's a mystery in the existence and the character of God that I don't think that we'll ever be able to understand. And yet in Scripture, we're given glimpses like this one of how God describes himself. And Albert Einstein once said this, "The fairest thing that we can experience is the mysterious. He who knows it not can no longer wonder, no longer feel amazement, and is as good as dead, a snuffed out candle." When I read a quote like that and we talk about this concept of the mystery of God, I can't help but think about our modern American lives because we like to understand and know and be able to explain how things work and how they came to be and why they exist. And the reality is that all of us were born with a certain amount of wonder. If we were to go down the hall to Movement Kids, we would see people who still have wonder in their lives and people who are still in amazement at certain things and people who can be surprised and people who can be excited. And the reality is that most of us don't have a lot of wonder left in our lives. And so when I say a name like Walt Disney, most of you probably don't think, that's my mentor, that's my guy, that's who I want to spend time with, right? We think like, oh, I used to be under, yeah, when I was younger, I would watch the things that he did. Someone like Walt Disney wants to give America wonder. And so through characters and theme parks and movies and stories, he's investing wonder and speaking wonder into America. But we don't really think about those things or enjoy those things too much, but we can enjoy them when we're around kids. The reality is those things are not for us adults. And when I say another name like Mr. Rogers, we think like, now there's a good guy, right? His goal was to invest all of this wonder into America and this childlike wonder and stories and characters and this atmosphere and this ecosystem of wonder. And yet most of us are probably not spending a lot of our time watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And if you are, you don't want to admit it, right? But there's certain people who are wanting to keep the wonder in life. And there are certain people who want even adults to have wonder. And I don't want to say this, but he's not here, so I just want to tell you guys about my dad real quick, right? He was someone that did not want the wonder to be in my life as a child. We used to go places, and we would see shows, and we would see magicians and things, and rather than let me just be in awe of this concept and think like, how did they do that? How did that happen? What's going on? He would always explain everything to us. Every time we'd see a magician, he would be like, all right, now here's what you're going to want to know. That right there, the reason they had that smoke come up is because when the smoke came up, that guy fell through a trap door in the floor. And so he didn't really disappear. He just went down through a door, just like you do every day, right? Or he would say, there's actually a mirror right there. So you're not seeing what you think you're seeing. That guy didn't saw his leg off or didn't cut his body in half. It's just a mirror. And he would always explain all of the trap doors, all of the things and take the wonder out of things. And the reality is that sometimes the wonder should remain in something. Sometimes the wonder should be there just to keep us excited and just to keep us interested. And we don't have to be able to explain everything. We don't have to be able to understand everything. We don't have to be able to describe everything. There's nothing wrong with a little wonder. And wonder is not just something that is mysterious, but I want us to think about this as it relates to this passage this morning. Sometimes when we can't understand something, we can't describe something, we can't fathom something, that's okay because wonder can lead us to worship. Wonder can lead us to worship, and I think we see that in these verses. And so let's comb through them here as we talk about this concept of wonder today. The first six verses of this chapter are talking about God's knowledge. As we read them, this fancy theological word for knowledge and for God's knowledge is it's omniscience. So we can write this down if you're a note taker. This is something worth knowing, that God is omniscient. God is all knowing. And saying that God is omniscient is kind of a no-brainer because we already said that a God can be fathomed is no God at all. And so to say that God is all knowing might seem like a no-brainer, and yet the psalmist wants us to know this about God. What's wonderful about this is that it's not just being said in some philosophical way, but rather in a way that applies to David personally. And so he says at least five times in this psalm that God knows him, but he says it in other ways. He's talking about the fact, and the root of this is in the Hebrew word, that God searches him and God knows him carefully. So when we say that God is all-knowing, we're not talking about knowledge. We're not saying that God would be really good at Jeopardy or something that requires pointless knowledge. We're saying that God's knowledge is directed toward us. God's knowledge of us is personal, and God knows us. God knows our daily activities. He knows what we think before we think those things. God knows where we're going to go, where we go. And these verses even tell us that God sifts us like grain because he's judging our actions with approval or disapproval. The reality is he knows us in a way that we don't know ourselves. Some of us might find that haunting. Some of us might find that a little too personal. And some of us are like, well, great, someone should know me because I can't figure myself out, right? Depending on your personality, you're going to react to that in different ways. But I want you to know that God knows you better than you know yourself. God knows what we're going to say, and God knows our thoughts before we speak those things. Not just that, but God knows our heart, and God knows our motives. God knows what we need, so he keeps his guiding and restraining hand on us, and God directs our lives and directs our paths. And even as David is writing this and tries to understand the greatness of God's knowledge, he finds himself overwhelmed and unable to fathom that or understand that. And I think sometimes as Americans and people who like to be in control, we think, well, what kind of description is that? And yet that wonder, that mystery can lead us to a response of worship. God is omniscient. God is all-knowing. This next part here that we see in verses 7 to 10 is that God is omnipresent, or God is all-present. Another way of saying that is to say that God is everywhere, or God is everywhere at all times. I remember when I was having my dad explain this to me when I was little, and I'm like, what does it mean that God is everywhere? I was picturing like God being like 12 miles tall and being, you know, like in two places at once. He's like, no, it's, he explained to me that like when we look at a globe or we look at a model, it's kind of this concept that God is looking down on us, and that everything in creation is before God at all times. And so there's no place that we can go that we can hide from God. If you know the story of Jonah, you know that Jonah tried to run and hide from God. It didn't go very well. We know that Adam and Eve tried to hide from God, but he found them. David expresses here that he doesn't feel hemmed in or controlled by God, because the reality is when you understand God, there's nowhere that you can go that you can hide. There's nowhere that you can escape God. So David is describing the depths and heights of heaven and hell and this thinking in the known edges of the world. And when he says that God is everywhere, that everything is before God at all times, he's thought about that in every way that his human mind can comprehend. And yet God's name, Emmanuel, means that God is with us. So this isn't just the fact that God's this bully and we're trying to outrun him and there's nowhere that we can go. No, it's greater than that. It's more intimate than that. In the same way that God knows us better than anyone else knows us, better than we know ourselves, God is with us more than anyone else is with us. God is with us more than we can be with ourselves, because he knows us and he loves us. And we can't outrun the presence of God, but we also can't outrun the love of God or the grace of God. We can't get away from God. And I want you to know that that is not a bad thing when we know his character. God is omniscient and all-knowing. God is omnipresent, all-present, and God is omnipotent. God is all-powerful. Another way to say that would just be to say that God has unlimited power. And even the word unlimited or infinite seems kind of crazy, because sometimes I think as we say that, we think of like this Marvel universe. I try to picture power and I think of like the coolest, best superhero I know. Maybe I'm just a standard American from the 80s, but I still think of Superman. I'm not trying to offend anyone if you have a different superhero that you think of, but that's who I think of when I think of powerful. And yet like every example of his power, every way that I think that power could be described, or every way that I can quantify that is just a joke, right? Compared to God's power. And so there's a mystery to his power. And we already said that if we can think of it, then it's not a good descriptor of God, because any God that we can fathom is no God at all. And yet out of all of the ways that the psalmist could describe God's power, all of the ways that he could capture that, all of the ways that he could quantify it, look at the example that we're given. He goes to this this metaphor and this description of God's power that involves the miracle of birth. And he talks about the power in conception of a child and the development and birth and this wonder and understanding genetics and anatomy and all of these things. And I don't think that's how I would have described God's power. And yet it captures it perfectly, that God is the author of life and every pregnancy and birth. And I don't say that today to find shame in anyone's story or make them feel guilt, but to renew our minds on this. These verses make it clear that God's power is evident to us through conception, through development, and through the birth of every child. What an incredible, mysterious, powerful, wonderful thing that we can't fathom or fully understand. Verse 13 tells us that we've been formed, we've been created, that God formed our innermost parts and our genetic structure, and he covered us and wove us together and shaped us. The Hebrew words here mean that God protects us, which shows how precious we are to him when his power is on display. Verses 15 and 16 capture that God develops our substance and intricately weaves us together with great care and secrecy and wonder. And we could begin to try and explain that today, but nothing that I could say would capture the power that's involved in that. That might feel like a rabbit trail, but I think the reality is sometimes we don't like to talk about things that we can't fully understand or can't fully explain or can't fully comprehend. Sometimes we don't like to just sit back and let the wonder of something lead to mystery. And we don't like to be able to not say, well, this is how I figured this out. And this is how science has figured this out. And this is how this can be explained. And yet sometimes we're just left with wonder. I remember when I was 17 and I went on a ministry trip. Some of you know that that's where my wife Kristen and I met. And what you don't know is that Mark, up to that point in his life, had been single as a Pringle, right? But Mark was on that trip and he was ready to mingle, all right? That's what you need to know. So I was on this ministry trip. That's a little rhyming. Hope you're paying attention, all right? I was on this trip and I remember one point leading up to this in my youth group. We had talked about dating and love at one point, and a guy in our youth group had challenged us to make a list of all of the things that we're looking for in a spouse. And so I made this list. I had it on this piece of cardboard and I tacked it up next to my electric guitar on my wall, because when you're 17, that's what you put on your wall. And I had this list, and here's some of the things that were on this list, all right? Here's what was on Mark's list. The first thing I said that I was looking for was someone that loved Jesus. And the second thing I said that I was looking for was someone who was attractive. And they might have been in that order, but I might have just said them so that you guys would think I was a good person, all right? But those were the top two, and that's what you need to know, okay? The other things I had on my list, I wanted someone that was athletic, someone that could kind of do sports, and someone that we could be active with. I was looking for someone that was low maintenance, not because I wanted to judge the other person, but because I am not merciful and I can be a bad person, and so I couldn't have someone that could get upset. I wanted someone that loved their family and wanted to invest in their family, but here's a very important one. I put down one that I wanted that person to be confident. And so I go on this trip, and there's 30 people on this team. We're riding around on a bus all summer, and we're hanging out. And the first couple days, they want you to get to know each other. And so they did what now I would maybe describe as speed dating. Really, really excited they did that. But they would put us on this bus, and they'd have people sit on the outside of the bus, and then the people on the aisle would like rotate. We'd move in a circle like every 2 minutes, right? So it was just like, sit next to this person. Tell them about your life. Tell them about your family. Tell them about what you're excited for this summer, what sports you play, whatever. And I remember this redheaded girl came in and sat next to me, and we were talking and we were getting to know each other. And right out of the gate, I couldn't see that she loved Jesus, but I could see that the other things were starting to stack up, right? I was pretty excited. And so we're talking, and she starts talking about her family and telling me about her family. And I didn't know that I had this list kind of in my head, but I was like, all right, check. And she's talking about soccer. And I was like, soccer, I play soccer. Okay. Okay. And we've been talking to each other for a couple minutes. And there was one point, I don't remember the joke, but after my Pringle joke failed, I'm glad I don't remember it. But I had enough confidence that I thought I could like interject a joke as we were talking. And she looked right at me and she's like, that's not funny. And I was like, Okay, she's confident. I like that a lot, right? What I could now describe is I find a little cockiness attractive, right? And so I remember in this moment, we're doing this like speed dating thing, thinking like, yes, this is, she meets all of the criteria. Yes, right? And there was a moment where I just thought, I couldn't describe that. I didn't know what I was looking for. I couldn't quantify it. It's not like in that moment I would have said, this will be the mother of my children and we will plant a church someday, you know? But I just remember having this moment as a 17-year-old and just kind of being in awe and being having a little wonder and thinking like, all right, God, I see you, right? And I don't say that today to tell you like the way you view God should be like 17-year-old Mark falling in love. But I want you to at least see this parallel that sometimes you're not going to know a situation is coming. You're not going to be able to describe a situation. You're not going to be able to put words around it or fully understand it. And sometimes you won't even know how you should act. But it's okay if you can't describe a situation, if you're not in control of a situation. And it's okay if something or if God just blows your mind in a situation. In fact, as we read this description of God, you might be thinking, so did you just tell me that I can't think about God, but I should think about God? Yes, I just spent a half hour telling you that. That's exactly what I told you, right? Because we can't fathom God. And that's not a bad thing. God is omniscient and all-knowing. God is omnipresent and all-present. God is omnipotent and all-powerful. But here's what I want us to avoid today. There's this term called anthropomorphism, which is basically the fact that we read our humanness into God and into Scripture and into the Bible, right? We like to make God like us. We like God to look and feel and think like us because we want to understand God and we want to know God and we want to be able to fathom God. And guess what that does to God? It doesn't make him God at all. So we need to be comfortable with not being able to fully describe God and not being able to fully understand God and not being able to wrap our human minds around God and not being able to in every moment dissect God and understand everything that he does. Because that's not God. Let me give you an example of that. Maybe you've heard the story of David and Goliath before, and you know that David was a shepherd, and he went to battle Goliath, and he defeated him, and God gave him the power and the strength to do that. But an example of anthropomorphism, maybe you've heard that story told where someone said, like, David defeated Goliath. Do you have a giant in your life? You can defeat the giants if you're brave like David, right? And we instantly interject ourselves into that story and we make that story about us. And guess what? The story of David and Goliath is not about us. The story of David and Goliath is not about you. It's not saying like, David wasn't great, but he was pretty athletic and he was accurate with a sling and you too can do that. No, the point of the story is this, that God is great and David was a joke. David wasn't mighty, David was worthless. David would have got himself killed if God wouldn't have shown up. And the only redeeming thing that David did was have faith that God was going to show up, that God was great. And he probably couldn't describe that. He probably couldn't say, God's going to do it in this way and this timeline. And yet all he knew was God was great and God was powerful and God was going to do his thing. That story and every story and the Bible that we hold and read every week, the point of that story is that God is great. And God is all-knowing, and God is all-powerful, and God is all-present, and we can't completely understand all of those things, and that's okay. Because in that mystery, there's a little bit of wonder, and that wonder leads to worship. And sometimes our wonder can be something that bothers us, and something that we think is for weak people, and something that we think we need to understand and figure out and dissect more, and the reality is there's a health to our wonder. Because we want to understand God and we want to make God petty like us, right? We know that that person ticked us off, that person gossiped about us, that person's dating someone that we used to date, and so we like to interject, oh, I know exactly what God's going to do to them and I know what God's going to do in that situation. I'm mad and God will be mad too, and so they need to watch their back. God's not petty like us. God doesn't have the same anger that we have, and God doesn't think like us and process with us, and we cheapen God. He's above that. He's outside of that. He's beyond that. We make God dull, and he's above that and beyond that and outside of that. And here's what Isaiah 55, 8 and 9 says, my thoughts are nothing like your thoughts, says the Lord, and my ways are far beyond anything you could imagine. For just as the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. God is omniscient and omnipresent and omnipotent. He's all-knowing, he's all-present, he's all-powerful. And when we try to fathom God or think that we can describe God or grasp God, we can't. And that's the point. God's knowledge and God's power and God's presence lead us to wonder and worship. That's where our wonder should take us. When you can't describe God, when you can't understand God, when you can't figure out God, that's the point. That's what makes him God, and that's what makes me and you and us not God. And that's why we need him, and that's why we have to rely on him, and that's why we're called to depend on him. In the ways that we're not God, in the ways that we sin, in the ways that we fall short, God steps into those spaces and interjects his character. In fact, he sent his one and only son because we couldn't measure up to the standard of perfection. And Jesus gave his life to fill in the gap, to build a bridge over our sin, over our shortcomings, so that we could know God. So that when we depend on God, when we put our faith and our hope and our trust and our love in Jesus, we can know God and we can have a relationship with him. And we can depend on him. And that doesn't mean that we understand him. That doesn't mean that we know everything about him. That doesn't mean that we've figured out science. That just means there's a mystery and there's a wonder to God. And that wonder leads us to worship. So I don't know what you're trying to control in your life today. I don't know what you're trying to figure out. I don't know what you've been trying to micromanage or how you've been trying to put your personality onto God's personality and describe his actions and figure out his next move. But I want you to know that there's going to be a certain mystery and you're never going to figure that out. And that's okay. And yet we're called to know God and to run toward him and to worship him and to seek him. And we can understand him more and more. And even though you'll never figure him out, you can have an intimacy and a relationship with him as you respond to his goodness. So we want to spend some time doing that today. We want to sing to God. We want to respond to him. And I hope that as we sing some of these words or describe God in certain ways, you won't think like, no, what does that really mean? How can I perfectly figure that out and control that and own it, right? There's going to be a wonder and a mystery. Let that wonder lead you to worship. Let God's character pull you into his presence more, even as you don't understand it. Let's pray together. God, thank you for your word. Thank you for the glimpses you give us of your character and the ways that you describe yourself. And God, we don't fully fathom you or understand you. God, we trust you, and we know that you are good. And so, God, I pray today as we worship, Lord, just that you will continue to show us glimpses of yourself. God, we will never fully understand you or know you. God, help us to seek you and see you in new ways and have an intimacy that's different today than it was yesterday, God. Help us to embrace the mystery of who you are and trust the mystery of who you are. And Lord, also find comfort in the fact that you are all-knowing, all-powerful, and that you are everywhere. We're before you at all times, God, and you choose to love us. Chose to send your son for us, and you seek us out because you love us. God, thank you for the ways that you love us. Thank you for who you are, and thank you that we can know you. It's in your son's name I pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Movement Church podcast. Our vision is to be a movement of people finding their way back to God. We hope wherever you are, this message encourages you to take the next step in your relationship with Jesus. For more information about Movement Church, including attending a worship experience, getting connected, or to give online, please visit movementcolumbus.com.